originally looking at this, but
welcome, everyone. I will call the Joint Committee on Implementing Measure 91 to order. Before we get started with our most stimulating presentation tonight from OLCC, I wanted to make a couple of announcements to the committee and to the audience. First of all, to the committee, we're getting a little backed up in legislative council with bill drafts and so on. And I just want to know, and I know I speak for my co-chair as well, all issues are going to be considered in this committee as we work toward our omnibus bill that will reflect our work. So to the extent that you can deal with us, you can deal down the road through amendments or whatever, would be most grateful. We've got legislative council very busy on some very complex matters, and it would be very helpful to keep the bill drafting to a minimum, but that doesn't mean that the issues will be at a minimum. All issues will be considered in this forum. And for the audience and people who are listening and the committee, I just wanted to give you an idea of the game plan here. Tonight we're going to hear some very specific recommendations from OLCC for measures that they would like to have very quickly so they can start their rulemaking process with some direction from the legislature. A lot of these are technical. After tonight, Co-Chair Leininger and I will get together and compile a bill that will probably err in the direction of being more inclusive of issue areas in the hopes of getting as much into this bill to provide OLCC with the direction they need as they go through their rulemaking process. And then issues that are policy issues that are really going to be subject to a lot of discussion in a serious policy matter, we will deal with in our main omnibus bill that we are working toward as a work product for this committee. So you'll be seeing agendas that are fluctuating because of the timing. We have a 72-hour notice requirement from the House, so we can't, as bills come out, we can't post them any sooner than 72 hours. And so we will have to abide by that. So you'll see some meetings being canceled here and there, and I apologize for that. It would be nice to just soldier on through, but we live in an imperfect world. So we will do our best to get things dealt with in as timely a way as possible. And again, we will be considering all issues before this committee as we go down the road through the vehicles that we have in front of us. So with that, I will open up the order of business tonight, which is the informational meeting, OLCC recommendations on marijuana policy. Welcome, Mr. Patridge.
Thank you, Senator Burnett. Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rob Patridge. I'm the chair of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. You all received a letter from us as well as a series of recommendations coming in from the OLCC last week. These are recommendations that the commission chose to vote on. It was a unanimous vote coming out of the OLCC based upon spending time with staff and based upon appearing in front of almost 4,000 people around the state as we've done our listening tours, as well as working with the Department of Justice legal counsel related to a variety of these issues. What we tried to do at the OLCC is identify a set of issues for you, first that are technical fixes that we believe are technical fixes related to Measure 91 that are relatively innocuous from our vantage point. Then there's a series of commission recommendations that we provided as well. And in the spreadsheet, we've identified things as a commission recommendation, a technical fix, and then as we told you originally before we started this listening tour and before the session started, we would give you a list of other items, which were kind of a list of some of those items we're hearing as we're out on the road. We're not taking a position one way or the other related to those. But the technical fixes and the commission requests are formal requests from your Liquor Control Commission, as We've worked with staff, as we've worked with our attorneys, as we've worked with and looked at our ability to manage the regulatory environment, the tools that we believe as the OLCC we need and are making that request to the legislature.
If I can just stop you there for half a second, just to make sure everybody's working from the same document. You're talking now tonight, you're going to focus on the February 27th document that lists commission requests and technical fixes.
Correct.
But isn't it true that some of the commission requests are of a technical nature, or?
I believe that several of the requests are of a technical nature. We tried to err on the side of being more conservative about what was a technical fix versus what was a commission request, because it could have some policy implications. So as you said at the beginning, you may draft a bill which may be more inclusive. As we go through these, I certainly think that some of them could be deemed technical fixes that are commission requests.
So just to be clear, the technical fixes came primarily from staff, or where did they come from, and how do you differentiate?
I think technical fixes, a lot of them came legally from the lawyers, mm-hmm. And really some of those things we just deemed that we didn't feel were, you know, that the spirit of what was in 91. That met with what the spirit of what 91 was, and we felt like those were technical fixes.
Okay, and then the commission requests were?
Were of more substance or policy-related things.
Okay.
We feel like most of the things that we provided as commission requests fall well within the spirit of the legislation. But certainly it's all arguable, and I'm certainly here to talk to you about any of those.
Okay.
We could have missed on some of those, but those are things that we feel like we need to have as a commission to properly administer the recreational marijuana program in the state.
Correct. And as you go through these, if you could give us a sense of urgency on particular things, like I'm sure there are some of these things that it wouldn't do any harm to wait, but others that you probably need urgency. If you could give us a sense of that,
okay.
That would be very helpful.
I will try and do so, certainly, as we move through. Excuse me. We've got up on the screen the list. It's the same list that you were provided. I know that several of you probably have read ahead and made notes and have questions for me, so I've prepared accordingly. I have Steve Marks, our executive director, and Tom Burns here as well, but they forced me to be the guy up here because this is a commission action. So they're here for more detail and technical pieces too. But our plan today was just to walk you through the recommendations as we gave them and as they're numbered, just for ease in what we're doing. So with that, we can go forward. The first item is age verification equipment. We currently do this at OLCC. To require age verification equipment if we have problems with somebody administering the law and not checking IDs.
You can step back a little bit from the mic. It's very simple.
So that's what I'm going to move it a little bit even. So that's what we're asking for the authority at our discretion to require age verification equipment. Just to give you an example, 19% of those we checked for IDs where we do these minor decoy operations, 19% of those people on the alcohol side fail to check properly for ID. When those things happen and we have problems with them, one of the options is to for them to install age verification equipment in order to minimize the fine and utilize that age verification equipment. We'd like to be able to do the same thing here, and so that's why we're asking for that. I don't know whether it's controversial or not, but it wasn't contemplated by the measure, so that's why we put it as a commission request, but I don't know that that's a controversial item or not. Measure 91 does not require us to bond, does not allow us to bond, and we need specific authority to do bonding. Again, this is another thing that we have in alcohol. We'd ask for the ability at our discretion to require producers to purchase bonds to cover their tax obligations to the state of Oregon. So that's something that we would like to have the ability to do. We do it in alcohol. Civil penalty authority, our lawyers have requested that we clean this up because there could be a question related to Section 30 sub 2 in the current legislation. So that could be seen as a technical fix. I think it's certainly contemplated in the measure that we have the civil penalty authority. There's legal language to clean that up. And Shannon O'Fallon, who you have who's been in front of this committee before, has helped us highlight that piece. Confiscation of marijuana. The measure says specifically that we can't possess marijuana. We're not sure how we administer the law without having the ability, even on a minor decoy or other things, to confiscate those pieces of, you know, evidence and do those kinds of things. We have the ability to do that. We do that with alcohol. We have places in all of our evidence rooms at all of our district offices to be able to do that. That would be we would need authority to do that. But again, that falls outside the scope of the measure, but we don't have any intent to do big confiscations unless there's, you know, potentially a criminal act or something we're going to have to approve as a civil penalty. So I think that was maybe more intended that the OLCC was not going to have a warehouse full of marijuana that would distribute out to licensed facilities. So that's not our intent, but we don't have this on a PowerPoint, so we're doing this kind of on a PDF. So sorry about that. Fees. We're asking for additional fee authority. We can only impose the fees related to the four licenses that were approved by the measure. We'd like to be able to impose some fees related to if somebody moves locations. That's additional cost to the state when we have to do those types of things. We can help flesh some of these things out, and we're trying to work on a full list of those kinds of fees. Other items such as, we don't want people to come in and apply for 5,000 different types of labeled products. It would overwhelm our system. We think that they should have some skin in the game to when labeling occurs, you know, and we've got to figure out how to prioritize that. So that would be one of our other fees intended. But staff is working on kind of a more exhaustive list of what those things are. So regarding firearms, again, just we go back to the Cole Memorandum, and this is why we made this as a commission request. The Cole Memorandum, to quote it, says, the Cole Memorandum says that violence and the use of firearms and the cultivation and distribution of marijuana should be prevented. So we are cultivating and we are distributing marijuana in this kind of a system. It's going to be up to the there's no specific legal interpretation, but on a plain reading, it can be certainly argued that we would, you know, that if firearms are allowed at those locations. We have to get specific legislative authority, as any agency would under ORS 166-170, which is in our, which is in the solution column, to be able to not have firearms. That's going to be a legislative piece, but our interpretation is we're just reading the Cole Memorandum on its plain face. But if you, you know, there, it's certainly arguable that, you know, they need it from a safety and security standpoint. But if you want us to specifically exclude, and that we need the authority to do that. So,
Madam Chair, how were we going to do any questions? Are we just going through the...
You know, as you go through, I think we're going to break our usual practice and have people
absolutely
interrupt you along the way, because I'm seeing some obvious questions
okay
that I don't want to see overlooked. So did you have one?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Rob was in the office yesterday with Steve Marks, and we went through the list. The firearms is one that I would like to flag for us to be looking at, because I do have an issue as to potential safety risk for individuals not having, and then if they're growing and using their home property, I don't see how we're going to, I mean, I'm not going to be saying someone that's barred from having firearms in at their residence if they're growing, let's say, outdoor grills in Southern Oregon. So I think, I'm not sure, I don't want to slow this down, but right, at some point maybe we should just at least flag it and we can come back and talk about them.
I think it's pretty safe to assume this will not be in the technical.
Yes.
Yeah. May I?
Co-Chair Langer.
Thanks. You know, I completely agree with you, Senator Przanski, and I'm hopeful that as we walk through this, because there are so many items here that we can ask questions as they arise, so that we don't lose the opportunity.
Yeah, I was just coming to that conclusion myself.
Okay.
Did you have a question, Representative Olson?
I do, yeah. Thanks, Madam Chair. Okay, so getting back to, well, actually two things, and they kind of tie into both, the one with the firearms, Rob, and then the other one dealing with the confiscation or seizure. I mean, if it's going to be something really large on the seizure side or confiscation, you'll probably have law enforcement involved, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's the same thing potentially with the firearm issue. I mean, we haven't talked about that, but I'm just kind of thinking.
Yeah. Our intent is any kind of large seizure, any kind of big criminal piece, it would all be dealt with either local law enforcement or through what we're contemplating related to state police in our budget. It is not, it does, you know, this is going to be temporarily or small kind of stuff. So, you know, it's kind of freeze the scene kind of stuff. So evidence isn't destroyed generally.
Right.
So the purpose of this is to just have the legal authority to have it.
Correct.
Because otherwise you don't.
Otherwise we're barred from having it, and we don't have an intent of setting up an OLCC warehouse that's the single point of distributing marijuana, which I know was concern of some of the people.
Mic.
But I think that because it was written
need
so
to
broadly,
back off from the
Rob,
mic
you're too
again.
Close.
Sorry.
To
push that mic away.
All right.
Okay. I'd be inclined, committee, to try to get something like that in there to give them the assurance that they can adopt their regulations accordingly. Okay, let's move on to insurance.
Okay, so number seven, insurance. We require, one of our biggest issues, especially at the retail level and in bars and restaurants, is certainly about insurance. We want people to be properly insured. We'd like to have the discretion to be able to do that and require the insurance. Certainly, we can't require insurance if there's no insurance in the market. It's not our intent to keep people out of the market, but it is, that's why we want to have it discretionary. It's certainly the intent of the OLCC, though, to protect the public as the best way, and insurance is one of those methods that we use. We suspend people's licenses currently, on failure to keep and maintain insurance, and that's, we believe, good public policy. So,
and committee, again, on this one, and unless I get some negative feedback, I'd be inclined to put this in as a matter
Absolutely.
Of discussion for the technical bill. Okay. All right. Next one.
Number eight is investigatory tools. We currently have, on the alcohol side, the ability to subpoena if we need to in order to bring people into a court system and obtain records. We rarely use it on the alcohol side. We have no intent of abusing it or overusing it. It costs a lot of money for us to do that. But in order to bring people under compliance, if they refuse to give us records, we need to have that subpoena authority to bring them in front of a judge to be able to obtain those records and to be able to enforce that. So that's
and
our
is
belief.
Is this exactly the same?
This is, we want the same power that we have for alcohol related to subpoenas.
Okay, because that was the question I had, that it's not any more extensive.
Correct.
Again, I would be inclined to put this in unless people have concerns. Representative Blanger.
So I just wanted to note that as we talk through these and we sort of do a preliminary take your temperature on whether it seems like it might be good for a technical fix bill, I think that's great for us to do our gut check first impressions. But I also really like the idea of us presenting to the community for testimony whether the community spots issues that perhaps we haven't. And if for some reason having a subpoena power really set on fire the hair of people in the community because, gosh darn it, there's some big thing that doesn't occur to me and might not have occurred to the OLCC, I'd love to have your I'm game for what you've proposed, Chair Burdick, that we sort of tentatively flag things that seem like they might be good in a technical fix bill, all subject to input from stakeholders on whether or not they desperately disagree or emphatically agree.
Absolutely. That's our process. You put the things in the bill, and then if there's a big firestorm around something, you take it out and you put it in the policy area.
Yes.
If there's no firestorm and we can help OLCC with their work, that's a worthy thing. So that's the spirit in which I say this. I don't expect everything that goes into this bill to survive.
Yes.
I would like to err in the direction of being as inclusive as we can to help them with their work. Okay, let's go.
The lab testing license we've talked to you about previously a little bit when we were in front of you. We are certainly interested in having a lab testing license. We certainly think that we believe that OLCC certainly is the place to help develop those standards, and we think that the market, as we've gone around the state and talked to a lot of growers, I think that there's a strong interest in letting having a lab testing license, and then with that helping letting OLCC, as the market kind of emerges and becomes and things change, to be able to move that testing around, to be able to look at whatever the best practices are, because the chemistry changes, the technology changes, all those things. And we've been able to do that on the alcohol side in a variety of issues. That's why we're the number one craft distilling state in the country and the number one craft brewing state, because we've moved with the market, I believe. And I think we'd like the ability to do that under that kind of a testing license.
Okay, and if we put something like this in, because I think there is consensus that we need to get the lab situation under control. If we did give you this authority early on, would you be flexible enough to incorporate the work of the lab work group that we have going?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And we'd want to be collaborative about what's really appropriate in rules and what we think we can do to help the industry as we've gone around the state and gotten input, as well as what the legislature wants as the kind of skeleton framework for what we need to do from a public policy standpoint.
Great, thanks.
May I jump in?
Please.
I think a question that comes to my mind as I think about this is to what extent that would be, you know, the purview of OLCC, or is there some part of that that is OHA content if it's about safety and standards like that? So it'll be interesting to hear community feedback on where that line appropriately falls.
So I will tell you, after this is one of the questions that we've raised in these listening sessions that we've been around the state, and it is overwhelming in our opinion that they would like the medical and the recreational standards for testing to be the same.
Right, we've heard that.
That they would, I would tell you that I believe it's overwhelming that they would like us to set those standards as OLCC, because the testing is changing, those kinds of things are changing, and they feel like they can come to us to try and tweak those standards as new products and new processes for products come onto the market. We have the ability to move with the technology, move with the testing equipment. So that's what we've heard overwhelmingly. And frankly, I mean, I would tell you that I would like, as the chair of the OLCC, for either us or the medical side to set one standard and the other side to follow it. You know, I would tell you that I think OLCC is more adept at working with markets, because we do it on the alcohol side all the time. So, you know, I'm not trying to build an empire at OLCC, but I certainly think that we're more of a market-driven piece as opposed to putting it on the medical side. But, you know, that's for here nor there. So that's for you guys to decide.
And Chair.
Senator Cruz.
While we're on the subject, Rob,
yes.
You would agree or disagree, and because there's got to be collaboration between OLCC and OHA, because the medical program is still going to be there. Would you submit that public health division of OHA is probably the appropriate place for certification of the facilities to take place?
Absolutely.
Okay. That's the sort of collaboration, Madam Chair, we're going to need between agencies to make this testing program work, so that it's certified there and they do the monitoring. So.
But you really wouldn't need that level of detail in a bill at this point, would you?
No, I think just allowing us to have a testing license, and then as you guys move through whatever policy issues related to that, then we will do that. But I think everybody agrees.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So Senator Cruz's question kind of goes to the certification. You know, we've heard out there that for third-party laboratory certification, I think you have all heard that. I haven't listened to all the testimony. I think that you guys are going to help establish what that certification looks like without, you know, working with us on what it looks like. So 11 is the limitations on co-locations of licenses. We don't believe at OLCC and the commission very strongly, wanted us to put that in the letter. That's why we put it in the letter the way we did, that you all received. We don't believe that we are going to, as the OLCC, under the licensing framework, even if the legislature didn't do anything with Measure 91, if there was nothing that came out of the legislature, we would not co-locate medical as it currently exists today and recreational at the same facility. We believe that in order to have fidelity in the system related to the Cole Memorandum and related to what we're at being asked to do regulatory-wise, we don't believe that that co-location would work, and it would be an unreasonable burden for OLCC to have to figure out what's on what side and how that would work. So,
you know, when you say facility, are you talking about dispensaries, or are you talking about grows, or what are you talking about?
We're talking about everything.
So you'd have medical only or recreational only?
In the current system, without any tracking in the medical side, we don't believe that we can bring any of that. We don't want to cross-pollinate that in the same facility at the grow level, at the producer level, or at any other level related to that.
But as I understood your previous decision, if someone has an OLCC license, they can grow for either medical or recreational. Is that correct?
Excuse me?
If someone has an OLCC license, Mr. Marks is coming up to the mm-hmm. podium here, they can grow for medical or recreational. Is that correct?
Oh, sorry. This is a different part. Steve's correcting me on the on the co-location of licenses. Right now, so on 11, we're talking specifically about co-locating licenses. We want the statutory authority to allow OLCC to limit license types at a single location. We may not want to grow and a processor at the same location. We may not want, now they can have all license types, but we may deem it not right to have all four license types at a single location.
Chair Leininger.
Does this recommendation speak to the issue of whether you think medical and recreational should be in the same spot? It does not speak to that issue.
Not number 11.
Okay.
Sorry.
But
we can go back to the other one, but not number 11. Yeah. Sorry, I got off base.
I
saw co-location and went to the other way. So.
I did find this confusing, though, because I wasn't sure what, and I didn't, I think I interpreted the way you revised it, but I don't understand what the problem is that's being addressed here, potentially.
So I'm going to let Tom talk real quick.
Co-chairs and members, for the record, Tom Burns, Director of Marijuana Program for the OLCC. The problem comes, for example, if you have a kitchen and a grow and a processor and a retail all in the same physical space. Right now, there's nothing that says that can happen or can't happen. What we're looking for is we could present an argument that you do not want a kitchen located where heavy solvents are being used to make concentrates. And so we need the authority to say you have to put a wall in, they have to be separate addresses, they have to be someplace. It's the co-location of all four of the recreational licenses in the same location. We're looking for authority to say, maybe you don't put a kitchen in that location because you've already got solvents in there.
Okay. And it's discretion.
And it's discretion. It's not
in our discretion to do that based upon the process type or whatever that may be used.
Okay. Well, now that you've explained it, I think it's probably worth putting it in and having some comment from the public
okay.
on how we would, what parameters we might want to put around that. Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I agree with that, but this is obviously a big, big issue mm-hmm. for a lot of people, so we'll need to be very careful with that.
Right, and it may be we have to defer it. How urgent do you think this is in terms of...
I don't know that this one is particularly urgent. We're just asking for some clarification related to, you know, whether we can make those decisions, so...
Okay. Okay, well, what, to be further discussed.
Okay. On the origin of seeds and plants, this is a legislative issue. whether this legislature wants to assume immaculate conception, whether this legislature wants to allow us to bring for a limited amount of time some of the clones and seeds, et cetera, over from the medicinal side. So that's half immaculate conception. But whatever, we just want to have some clear guidance from the legislature related to this issue, because it's certainly hard to administer something when you don't know how it originates, or we don't make a policy choice on how it originates.
Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, thanks. This is a question that's occurred to many people, myself included. You are ostensibly to be scaled up and operating by July 1. So the question of supply was dealt with earlier. You know, you said basically you'd have to have time for a cycle of growing to bring legal product into the retail markets. And, you know, then the concept of immaculate conception reared, you know, and so the real question is, do you have a start date by which retail outlets will be scaled up and operating? And if so, from whence will they be supplied?
Co-Chair, Senator Farrioli, that's what we're asking you, is how you want us to assume how they're going to be originally supplied at the grower level to be put into the system. So while we don't have a date, certainly some states have assumed immaculate conception, we're going to have to regulate it, and that's why we're asking you. You know, the policy is silent to it in Measure 91. So that is not a, you know, if you're going to ask the OLCC to assume immaculate conception, then we will go forth and assume immaculate conception. If you're going to say it needs to come in for a limited time period from the medical, then we will assume half immaculate conception. But we would like some legislative direction related to this matter.
Well, Madam Chair, the assumption is that we'll be scaling up from 70,000 medical marijuana users that have cards to a marijuana market of approximately 500,000 users. Only those other additional users are currently being supplied by an illicit market. So it's not like we're going to encounter new users, you know, for marijuana. They're already being served in an illicit market, and your objective is to try to move them into a licit market. So I would suggest that the burden is on the department to show how it feasibly could scale up and meet the market demand at the earliest possible date after the effective date of Measure 91. So instead of asking us for the answer, if you are going to have the authority to regulate, then you better come up with a plan to show us how that will be accomplished. That's a burden on you.
Co-chairs and Senator Farrioli, I think you're putting the entire marijuana industry at risk if you don't clarify this. I mean, the question is, do we regulate it or don't we regulate it? If you're asking us to turn a blind eye and assume immaculate conception and that this appears, then that is certainly a policy piece. But right now, law enforcement, the OLCC, and growers don't know how they're supposed to get it. And if we want to bring people into a legal market and we want to build a system, we're asking for the legislature to make it clear for law enforcement, for the OLCC, both of which are criminal regulators and regulators of a legal regulatory system, how you want us to do it. That's what we're asking for.
Madam Chair, I know the co-chairs, both of you went back to Colorado. What did they do with that back there?
No, we really didn't get that level of detail in terms of, because right now they have an established supply system, and we didn't get that level of detail. Go ahead.
Co-chairs and Representative Olson, Colorado used the medical, so half immaculate conception. Washington used immaculate conception. So we'd like Oregon to make a choice. Yeah. We don't care what the choice is, but we would certainly like the choice made as regulators. And I think it's only fair to the growers and law enforcement and everybody else for the legislature to tell the rest of the state, 56% of which voted in favor of this measure, what they'd like us to do.
Senator Prusansky, thank you for your patience.
Yeah, so I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. I heard the date July 1. July 1 is for personal use and consumption. It's not retail sale. We're not going to have retail sale until sometime in 2016, and based on what we've heard from the commission already, it may be September or October. And so the licensing part for bringing this all up, I mean, this isn't going to happen this year.
Right.
So we're basically gearing up for they can be able to function, and this is, to me, not something that needs to be decided today or tomorrow, just within our process, because it's not going to get to us until getting licenses applications January 1 of 2016, and that, as we've already heard, they're going to put the growers in first to get them up and running so they can start growing, and then I guess at some point there may need to be a decision, is there enough supply to be in the system when we go up and running, or do we need to have a push for that to occur so we don't have what happened in Washington State? But for what's happening in 2015 is only personal use and personal grow.
But Senator Farioli also had a point earlier, and that is, where do the personal use people get their marijuana?
Yeah.
And the question arises, and this isn't on your list, but I thought I hope I'm quoting you correctly.
If not, ma'am, I'll certainly correct
should
you.
Should we be allowing, as of July 1st, should we be allowing medical dispensaries to serve recreational customers?
See, Madam Chair, I see a bunch of heads nodding in two directions out in the crowd. The point is, this whole idea of immaculate conception either applies to individuals as well as institutions.
Absolutely.
Or it's totally fallacious. So the question is, if you have legal use for individuals on July 1st, but no legal source of supply, either an interim source or immaculately conceived, you're going to be violating the first principle that I think the committee was asked to honor, and that's honoring the will of the people. So I'm going to suggest that we need to come up with some solution that resolves the issue of expectation that personal use will be legal on a specific date in the state of Oregon. Ergo, I would assume a supply has to be accounted for that would also be legal.
They're going to grow outside.
Good point.
I don't disagree.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think this is an important issue, that we start out the recreational growers on the right foot and the legal foot, so that they don't, there's no question in anybody's mind that they've gotten their plants from a legal source. And I think I was going to suggest that our nursery industry may provide some of the tools that we need to figure out how to properly control these initial crops and get them built up. They do that with every other crop that they grow. Mm-hmm. So we may get some help from our nursery industry folks.
I think it's worth trying to get something in this subject area in a bill, if not for the licensees, at least for the some kind of direction for the recreational users. I think some good points have been raised here. So let's get some smart people together and try to do something on that. Yeah. Representative Reinhardt.
Thanks. I think a really important issue that I've heard some of you talk about before, and I think we really need to address as we decide what the original supply, the first generation supply of marijuana to the adult use recreational market is going to be, is that, you know, depending on when that market gets going, it's either something that outdoor growers will have a crop that can potentially become part of or not, and whether outdoor growers, say the adult use recreational market starts in June of 2016, that's before a harvest cycle for the outdoor market, but they may have some left over, and a policy decision about from whence that first round of supply comes is going to have huge ramifications for growers. If we bless and sort of give amnesty to existing stuff that came up under the OMMA system, you either give a big opportunity to outdoor growers or you box them out from the first generation of supply. And I just think we have to acknowledge that that's a pretty significant policy decision in terms of how we give everyone first step.
Okay, let's move on.
Okay, number 13 is the Oregon Department of Agriculture overlapping jurisdiction. We've been working with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. They are going to have some amended statutes to deal with the licensees who are subject to license on both. We're working through the technical details related to that. I view that as a technical fix, really, to a great extent, but it is a policy issue related to how the Oregon Department of Agriculture really is going to, if they're going to treat it as a crop or not. So we need to work through those issues.
And that does sound, I think you said it's a policy question that probably doesn't need to go urgently into this bill.
And I think there's some thought that needs to go through.
Right.
That if based on your timing, that we probably can't get done.
And the land use environmental group is working on that.
Are they working on it? Good. Okay. We will, that will not show up in the bill then. Okay. Payment of tax.
With the seed-to-sale tracking system, we're going to know immediately when that tax is owed, because it's going to be when they've finished off the product. The way the measure's written, there's no reason for us to wait a couple months for the state to collect that tax. We'd like to be require that the tax to be reported and paid in an efficient, reasonable manner set by the commission rather than, you know, just a quarterly, I think it's quarterly in 91.
The end of the following month.
Yeah, the end of the following month. So.
Okay, I think there's going to be a serious discussion about changing the point of taxation.
Okay.
And so it looks to me like this is something that probably should be deferred unless there's some general language that we
can. No, I think you should, based on what I've heard, you may want to defer this one.
Okay. All right, peace officer.
Okay. We came to you before related to number 15, peace officer authority. We're asking for the same authority that we would have and we currently have related to OLCC and liquor. We feel like from a commission standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. You know, we have these regional offices. We cross-train officers to do enforcement. We're going to continue to cross-train officers to do marijuana and liquor. OLCC does not have a reputation of being the jackbooted thugs out there running around related to alcohol regulation. It's an important piece of what we do, and I believe it's an important piece to help local law enforcement do what needs to get done as we've aided them. That's why we've asked for peace officer authority related to having the having our officers be able to do that. That was a request by the commission.
Okay, and is this something that's important to get in right from the get-go, or is this something that could be?
I would tell you that it's going to be. I would tell you that it's going to be important as we develop our budget. We have to develop a budget, obviously, for the Ways and Means Committees related to this. Certainly, the cost related to training those officers, additional time at DPSST, the type of personnel we're going to hire, and how we're going to do it is going to be going to affect our budgeting process. So we would like to have it resolved early so that Ways and Means can do their job related to peace officer authority.
I'd like to get kind of a sense of the committee on this one. This has been discussed before. Mm-hmm. I think we had a news story on it. Anybody like to speak up on this? I've never seen this committee so quiet. Go on, Senator Ferriello.
Well, Madam Chair, I thought that the argument that the agency made about not really being able to do more than secure a scene or a site that they thought there were violations on was a compelling argument. So it would seem to me that if we're using the parallel of the OLCC's authority under alcohol, that we would expand the, or at least create the authority under marijuana. So, you know, I don't know how much of an emergency this is. I don't know what the perfect timing would be. But it seems to me that expanding their peace officer authority to match what they currently have with alcohol is a sensible step forward.
So, Madam Chair, I just, again, I go back to the first couple points that we talked about a little bit for the seizure part of it, as well as the firearms piece. If you're extending the authority for peace officer authority, then you're addressing those two issues, too, at the same time.
Representative Leininger.
You know, I think that this is going to be an important issue to get community input on, but also to learn a little bit more about. I don't know exactly what you mean when you say create what it would entail to create peace officer authority. I know that at least one of the three of you had talked about civil enforcement as opposed to criminal enforcement, and that you, like many who supported Measure 91, are not seeking to create more criminalization of conduct or incarceration, that if this leads to an opportunity to do civil enforcement as an alternative to criminal enforcement actions, that's an interesting element I'd need to learn more about. I also think the cost, you know, what does it mean to grant peace officer authority? Does that mean fill as many FTE of peace officers as what? I mean, it's a pretty big set of questions in my mind, but I'd be interested in learning more about what it would entail and hearing if it's a good idea.
Senator Prusansky.
Madam Chair, I look at this as basically just extending, as Senator Farioli said, what's already existing for alcohol. These officers are already there. They're already trained. They already have this authority on alcohol. And basically, you're going to put them in a situation where they come on to a marijuana facility that's out of compliance and they need to take possession. Right now, they can't take possession. So without having that authority to do that, the next one, when we get down to the like possession of marijuana on item number 16, there's going to be some things that will track with this as to having specific reasons why they would be able to take it in possession, knowing that the voters did not want to see state green stores being operated, that it was going to be independent retail operations. But at some point, you have to be able to have them have the, call it the flexibility, to actually enforce what is necessary. And when you're dealing with a controlled substance, they have to have certain authority to do what they need to do to actually gain control over the scene.
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
Just for a point of clarification, currently, correct me if I'm wrong, OLCC has the authority to investigate, site, seize, arrest, and secure.
Co-chairs and Senator Farioli, that is correct. And, you know, our first approach is always education at OLCC, and that's what we're trying to do. Our first approach is to address the situation and educate. But if we've got to deal with an emergency situation, that's why we want the authority to do this. We want to be able to cross-train these people. We don't want them to wear one hat with peace officer authority on the liquor side and then send them out to a grow and they have no authority. I mean, it's just a weird situation of why we're training up the people we do. You know, the Ways and Means Committee will determine what the appropriate amount of staffing that the OSCC will have related to how many peace officers and what we're doing. We certainly have no intent at the OLCC. We certainly understand, you know, that the intent of the voters was to not put this from a civil liberty standpoint into a criminal situation. We get that clearly. We're just trying to make it easier on officers. We're trying to aid local law enforcement, and we're trying to do what we need to do from a regulatory standpoint to be able to have that, to be able to have the tools necessary to regulate.
Okay, well, it'd be an interesting discussion.
All right.
Let's move on to government entities possessing marijuana.
Number 16 is the possession of marijuana by other government entities. There's certainly going to be other government entities that are going to need to possess marijuana in one form or another. We're saying that needs to be clear for their enforcement processes. We can't figure out what all those things are today, and I think, you know, to have broad authority for the state government agencies to be able to do that in order to carry out their responsibilities is a legislative decision that needs to be pointed out. Otherwise, technically they're committing a crime, and certainly we don't want any government employee to be saying, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to be the guy committing the crime.
I had a fascinating discussion with some folks from Extension Services, and I expected that they would be available to provide technical assistance to growers and processors and others as they would with food crops and food production. And the answer, of course, is since they're federally funded, they would be beyond the reach of those that may have questions, technical or otherwise, for food production or growing operations. So, I don't underestimate the situations where agencies could have a need to have possession for investigative purposes, but also for a wide variety of other purposes. But we need to know where the lines are drawn at the federal level. For instance, consumption of marijuana products on federal lands would be a federal violation for which federal authorities will enforce. So, I mean, there are, you know, we're going to be navigating through some situations, and I do see the need for very clearly defining which agencies and under what circumstances.
These are all the examples you gave are all state agencies, so I think I would be inclined to put this in the bill, but to make sure that we are talking about state agencies, because those are the only ones that can legally do it. Okay. All right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pruszynski.
Following what Senator Farioli says, I think we're on the same page as too. I did hear Rob say broad authority. I'm not real comfortable with broad authority. I think it really needs to be specific as to exactly what they're have the authority to do in the possession, because if not, that could cause unintended consequences.
Right.
Co-chairs and Senator Pruszynski. I'm not sure a lot of agencies have even thought about this, and so you could certainly wait till the end of session. What I meant when I said broad was that we exempt government agencies, but then the governor's got to give some kind of directive, in my opinion, that they've got to go through, look through their policies and come up with internal policies at their own agencies.
Well, and this
because, you know, I'm not sure that we want to be, I don't know time-wise that the legislature during its limited time has the ability to do that. So, but I'm open to whatever, but that's why we said broad authority.
Well, but this would be subject to rulemaking. I mean, you would determine what kind of possession was appropriate in the rulemaking process, correct?
That wasn't what we had contemplated. We could do it that way. Certainly that, and change those things around that OLCC could give the authority to the other agencies. But I think our initial thought was statutorily to allow other agencies to do that subject to their own agency rules, and then agencies are going to have to come up with their own rules on what they want to do within their own agency related to possessing, to those types of possession. We can look at it either way, but we think there needs to be some kind of piece to deal with some of these unanticipated consequences that may or may not occur related to varying agencies around the state that may come into contact.
So is the sense of the committee that this should wait, or do you want to take a shot at it here, some language?
Well, Madam Chair, I personally didn't expect that a federal nexus would make it impossible for a state agency. Mm-hmm. For instance, the universities will not be doing research or testing. Mm-hmm. The extension agencies will not be doing technical advice as they would with any other commodity. There may be a host of other federal nexus that we are not even contemplating or aware of. You'll have to poll each agency and ask them the question, as viewed through the prism of their legal counsel, would they have a role or would they be prohibited from a role? And that would inform the possession question. We're going to have to ask 105 questions.
Right, and that's why I said broadly, and then each agency will have to come up with their own policies to possess marijuana within their agency. But or OSCC can do it, but we hadn't contemplated that particularly.
Well, maybe we'll take a shot at it and see what kind of testimony we get from the agencies. Yeah, why not?
No, and we certainly think that the federal We certainly think that the we're certainly well aware of the federal issues related to this, but as you know, and as all of you know, in doing budgets, we're not sure where federal money touches every agency every time, and so it's certainly a an ongoing issue that agencies, if they touch marijuana, are going to have to be diligent about and continue to have rigor in terms of their own policies. So,
okay. All right. Number 17?
Number 17 is really the question that we had before related to the potential overlap of medical and recreational marijuana. We just wanted to make the legislature aware as you move forward on policy choices, and we've certainly had conversations related to what may or may not, what the medical system may or may not look like. We wanted to address the legislature to let them know that unless those who grew in a medical system had some kind of seed-to-sale tracking system, that we didn't want that co-located in a with a recreational facility. And that's not a policy issue that you have to decide one way or the other. Really, the OLCC can decide not to license that. But we wanted to make you aware that if the intent was, and I know that there's a lot of dispensaries who are interested in converting or getting a recreational license, we are not intending to license dispensaries that currently are in the medical system with a overlying recreational license, because we believe that it falls outside of Measure 91 and puts in jeopardy the recreational marijuana system.
As I understood your unanimous commission decision, it was if somebody wants to get into the recreational market, they get one license, an OLCC license, and then they can participate in both markets. Is that correct?
That is correct. Or if you set up a parallel tracking system that met all the provisions of the COL requirements, from our vantage point, that we could, they could be co-licensed, but not unless it's tracked seed to sale. Basically, we would not be interested in licensing.
Representative Leininger.
Thank you. Well, I think it's great that we're on this issue because it is just such a giant policy area on which we'll certainly want, you know, lots of community input. But, you know, I think you identify two really important pieces of the big policy decision, one of which is whether co-location of, you know, the merits or risks of co-location of medical and Measure 91 adult use recreational stores, and then the kind of correlative question of what a license by OLCC would entitle one to do in terms of supplying stores, you know. And that's a giant policy question. Does getting a license to be a producer from OLCC, is that synonymous with meaning that you can supply medical stores? Or does that mean you can supply OLCC-licensed adult-use recreational stores? And I think that's a really meaty thing for us to consider because it has huge ramifications for the other system. So, you know, I look forward to us considering it, but I figure it's going to be a really robust debate on which people will have a lot of passionate feelings. And I hope people will be prepared to come in and voice those because we're going to be talking turkey about that.
Well, and this is really at the heart of bills that Representative Buckley and I are both working on to try to figure out how these systems coexist. And I guess my question is, you've expressed, the commission has expressed its intent not to license growers who, not to have a weaker license and an OLCC license, that it would have to, if they are two licenses, they would have to be of equal strength. And I guess the question is, are you confident that you have the authority to do that?
I believe that the commission does have the authority not to make the decision not to license based on that. And the commission feels strongly about that. You know, we've obviously consulted with counsel as well. So we feel, you know, the commission, the way the commission structure is set up in Oregon, we do have some independence, certainly. And we certainly feel like that's our, we have that ability to do that. You know, we see some very large problems on the, we're very well aware of some large problems. And as we've gone to visit Colorado and Washington State, frankly, that's the biggest problems in their system currently, are the market leakage and the black market from the medicinal side, as well as, you know, what's going on related to the taxes. Those are the kind of the two issues that are overwhelmingly in front of the commission as we look at regulating a market. And as you're well aware, and articles came out last week related to Colorado, really their recreational system only has about 36% of the market currently. So they're not seeing that. There's a huge black market piece that's out there with unregulated medical marijuana grows. And if, you know, we're kind of at cross purposes related to, you know, the stated intended measures of the stated intention of 91 and how that comes to cross purposes with the Wild West, frankly, of unregulated grows on the medicinal side.
And we've got, I think, every member of this committee in one way or the other is working on this issue. So I think probably if you are confident you already have the authority, I think we probably will defer this discussion to the bills that we have that
Absolutely.
Deal specifically with the medical program. Okay, next.
Number 18 is presenting identification for age. There's certainly a question about when in the measure currently about when we present identification for age. It's very clear, I think, in Section 16. We'd like the authority to set by rule based upon location and based upon, you know, the type of facility somebody's putting together, where it's appropriate to card people and where it's not. We currently work with liquor agents doing the same kinds of things on carding and those types of things. We'd like the ability to be flexible related to those types of things rather than what's prescribed in the measure.
Okay. I would be inclined to put this in, given the Cole memorandum and a few other things. All right. What's 19?
19 is processing licenses. We've come to the committee before as an example related to different types of processor licenses. I don't think we're inclined, especially like from a staffing level, to just say you get a processing license and you can do any type of processing. I think we want to know what type of processing they're going to do so we can send the right personnel to their facility. We can't train everybody on looking at extraction processes, and we're going to have very highly specialized personnel that are going to go out and look at some of these things. We just don't want a broad-based processor's license. Whether you give us additional licensing authority or you give us endorsement authority under a processing license that they can get this kind of authority or another kind of authority, it's really not a fee-raising issue from OLCC's standpoint, but we'd like to be able to limit what kinds of endorsements or license type they have so that we can send out the right personnel so that we can properly regulate what's going on.
An endorsement seems to make more sense to me than a separate sub-license of some kind.
Okay.
How does the rest of the committee feel about that? Okay.
And if you could give us that, then we could create the endorsements as we saw fit related to this structure as new things come to market that we're going to have to specially train staff on that we're going to have to do. So.
Okay. 20.
20. Producer packaging for sale. It's our belief that producers should have the ability to take their marijuana, dry it out, and put it into a package and sell it directly to a retailer if they want. Currently, they would have to get two license types. They can't package it for sale the way Measure 91 is written and sell it directly to a retailer. They can only basically bulk package it. We think that this would be an advantage for somebody who, especially small growers, it would be better for small business that they could dry it, put it in a package. It's all seed to sale tracked anyway, and they could sell directly to the retailer rather than have the burden of having another $1,000 license as a producer.
Do I see heads nodding on this one? Okay. All right. 21.
In Measure 91, unlike alcohol, we have the broad authority under alcohol to set our rules and adopt rules based upon the fact that we are protecting public health and safety. This gives us a little bit broader discretion related to what we view as public health and safety. That was excluded under Measure 91. I think the fear was about an overreach. We certainly acknowledge that, but we've tried to set rules based upon public health and safety. That's why we're a regulatory agency. We'd like that same mission as we go forward looking at this. We'd like that clarification.
So is this in statute already for alcohol?
It is.
Okay, so identical language for marijuana is what you're looking for?
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one question I have with respect to this is this authority confined to the activities within the license?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's not beyond, it's not everything else, but
we leave the rest of it to you.
But so it's not broad public safety authority. And would the remedy be, what would the remedies be if, so you come in and find something that doesn't meet the specifications of the license, they're operating outside the guidelines that are set forth in their license, would it be to pull the license or would there be some remedy required? How would that work?
That would be all part of our co-chairs and Representative Helm, that would all be part of our rules process. We have to have a procedural process that we adopt and rules that we would have to follow. We would probably follow the same kind of way we do alcohol related to hearings, the individual licensee's rights, the civil penalty schedules that we put together, all those types of things. It also includes a whole body of law, which will provide, we believe, a whole body of law that which provides clarity and interpretation for licensees rather than kind of leave it hanging out there as it currently is. So if we have the parallel authority, when a licensee goes to a lawyer, they can actually at least try and parallel some of those things if the language is the same, and it's the legislative intent that language is the same. So we think it provides clarity for everybody.
And that's where you get your due process.
Correct.
Thank you. Good question. Okay, 22.
22 is retail packaging for sale. It would allow OCC the discretion to define packaging at the retail level or incorporate certain packaging privileges via an endorsement from their retail license. We know that retail outlets may want to receive bulk flowers and then store brand or package some of those things. We're not saying we want to allow that, but we'd like the flexibility to allow that. We anticipate, now we have growlers, we have all those kinds of things. This is the same type of thing, but rather than come to you later on with that asking for that authority, we have to set up a whole set of rules related to this and how it would work, but we'd like to be able to have that flexibility if we decide we're going to go down that path, rather than coming back to the legislature.
This seems small business friendly. Do people like this concept?
We believe it's business friendly. So,
okay.
We're trying to anticipate some of those things that we've had to come back to the legislature on as well, based upon our regulatory history. So, I know some people who are worried that we're going to be overly onerous, but, just the packaging idea for, producers to sell directly to retail, those are things that we realize as a regulatory agency that's geared to making a profit.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to meet the threshold of processor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Number 23 is review books and records for cause or emergency. We would like to have the ability to review books and records for cause and emergency. Rather than the 72-hour provision, we feel like things are modern enough today that we should be able to do that rather than wait the 72 hours. I would tell you this is not a parallel provision with alcohol. Frankly, we haven't come with a technical fixed bill with alcohol, but we would like to be able to do that. We think it's good government as long as we have cause to request their books and records. We think that that's a reasonable request.
But you don't have this authority for alcohol?
We don't have the emergency. We have a 72-hour requirement.
Is that correct?
Yeah. So we'd like you to change it for alcohol, too, but...
Representative Wilson.
Yes, thank you. Rob, what do we mean by immediately access the books? What does that look like?
Well, I think that we just want to be able to access the books in a reasonable time frame. 72 hours especially could be too long based upon the type of investigation that we're going to do. Rather than throw them in a criminal procedure, which is what we're trying to avoid, we'd rather ask them for the books on a more immediate basis to look at their books and ask for their books. And going back to the subpoena authority, you know, we also have that. I mean, we could always seize the police could seize them criminally if we thought it was a criminal investigation. We don't want to have to do that, but we also don't want them to modify records. So, you know, I would tell you that we, you know, on the liquor side, we're not so concerned about it because we know how much liquor is going in and out, and it has to go into a state account. It's a different regulatory environment because we're relying upon the grower's books much more so than when they scan their Visa card and it comes into the state coffers and then we pay out to the liquor stores. It's a very different tax system related to that. So we would like the ability to ask them, you know, and we've got to have cause, you know, to do that. We can't, it's like a probable cause kind of standard. We just can't make their life difficult.
A follow up?
Yeah, then could we sharpen the pencil on that then just a bit? Say you just knock on the door and say, give us the books, or what?
Again, we would have to have, Coach Representative Wilson, we'd have to have cause to be able to ask them for an emergency copy of their records. Mm-hmm. So we would just have an emergency clause. Generally, we would have 72 hours, but we would have an emergency clause if we wanted them right away.
Madam Chair. Okay, so, all right, I'm just going to try to kind of take a look at a snapshot of what authority exists for law enforcement right now for going out for doing dealer inspections as well as record inspections. You do not need to give any notice, and you don't have, I mean, you don't have to go through all the books and everything, and you can just do kind of a random check. But, you know, why would you not apply something similar to this?
I'm not sure
I'm sorry.
I follow. Sorry.
The same kind of concept of what you would do for just being able to go out and inspect without giving any notice. Why would you not, you know, because you don't need probable cause under that set of circumstances.
Correct. We don't need probable cause under those kinds of circumstances. But right now, if we went in and asked for their books, they could say, we got 72 hours for you to look at our books. So we've got we're there for the inspection. Things aren't right. We say we want to look at your books. Now they have 72 hours to give us their books.
Okay. Senator Prusansky.
So I think, again, we're going to have to figure out what this really means, because books today could mean a computer. Mm-hmm. That's going to be some type of database as to how the records are being stored. And then is there an obligation that, quote-unquote, the books or at the actual premises where the sales might be occurring, or the whatever the license is for. So I just think that there's some stuff we need to really kind of look at as to how that's actually going to be applied, and what is, as Representative Wilson said, you know, reasonable in the sense of a turnaround. I understand 72 hours is, you know, 3 days is maybe too long, but.
I think we'll probably, this one looks like it needs more discussion than a technical bill. So unless people specifically want this, I'd be inclined to.
What I'd like to do is we'll come back to you with a letter related to this. Because it can be more broadly written. If you look at Measure 91 under Section 23, what it really says is, and if you guys have that, I think you, I don't know where it's at. Is it? No, they said they put it on here. Did you guys add it? Was it on here?
What are you looking for?
You guys had the measure.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, Measure 91 in its entirety is found in OLIS, if you have availability there.
Yeah. But what Section 23 says is the Oregon Liquor Control Commission has the right, after 72-hour notice,
right,
to the owner or the agent of the owner to make an examination of the books and may at any time make an examination of the premises of any person licensed under Section 3 to 70 of this Act for the purpose of determining compliance with the Sections 3 through 70 Act. So we can go on the premises, certainly, but they can say, well, we don't have to show you the books. We got 72 hours to show you the books. So, you know, we can get back to you related to this, but that was our intent was, you know, if there's an emergency reason why we need, feel like we need to look at the books, yeah, rather than elevating this to a criminal, you know, type of investigation, getting warrants and doing all those kinds of things to be able to deal with people, you know, we certainly deal with unreasonable people like on occasion who don't want to, who don't do things on the liquor side. But this is certainly much different than liquor in terms of the books and what we know and where the money is kept. So,
could I ask a favor of Representative Helm and Senator Prasansky to see if you can work with him and see if we can get some language in there that might be helpful, or whether we'll have to defer it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator one of us down here. Yeah. There is a parallel here in the OLCC liquor authority. Establishments have to keep a log of incidents. That log is immediately available at all times to the enforcement agents who visits without prior notice. So there are some parallels that exist under the liquor side of the authority to access to books and records that does not have a 72-hour notification window. So I just wanted to point that out that if we're going to parallel those systems, that we ought to consider an incident where the enforcement personnel see an issue and need to be able to confirm what they're seeing is, you know, potentially or actually a violation. To have them go away and come back in 72 hours simply gives those of us that are familiar with creative accounting an opportunity to, you know, grab a six-pack and sit down with a green visor and a calculator and figure out how to make those books balance. So,
Senator Farioli and Kutcher, I would certainly say that it is much easier to change things in QuickBooks than the old journal logs when the liquor laws were first put on the books. Okay. There's certainly some.
We will count on Senator Prasansky and Representative Helm to see if we can come up with something that observes due process and is limited appropriately. Okay, 24.
24, we've told this committee and the entire legislature that it is our intent to implement a seed-to-sale tracking system. We'd just like you to adopt as a piece of legislation that formally gives us that authority, even though we do feel like we have that authority, but we'd like to all be on the same page.
Okay, let's try to move along. I think we'll put that in the bill.
Okay.
Server
25 is server permits. We've talked about server permits, similar to what we have in an alcohol server permit. I know that there are some consternation and some don't. There's certainly questions related to the level and the education piece related to this, but...
Jennifer.
Oh, I've just been waiting for this question all day.
I know.
So will we be doing drug testing on the servers?
Co-chairs and Senator Farioli, this is a business decision that the business will get to decide. That is not something that the OLCC wants to get into as to their policies.
Okay. We'll put that in. All right. Next one. 26.
26, use of marijuana in a vehicle. We certainly have cited people under the open container laws related to their establishments. We have, under the OLCC, we not only look just not on the inside, but on the outside, because certainly we don't want to create an attractive nuisance for a bad area. So this is something that we look at, instances that happen outside. Nothing was contemplated in Measure 91 related to open container kind of laws. We think that legislature should probably address this issue. How you address it is certainly up to the legislature, but we certainly would like to have some clarification. We certainly don't want people sitting outside these locations and creating a nuisance for communities.
You know, this is one I'd like to see the Judiciary Committee take on.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right, commission membership.
The commission membership, these are other items. If you'd like us to skip to, the other items were those items that were brought up to us that we're bringing before the legislative committee, that we're bringing to you all. The commission has not taken a position on those. We're just bringing those to your attention because we've gathered them, those items that are tagged in the action type as other. I know you're short on time. I'm happy to jump ahead to the technical fixes.
Okay, before you do that, can we just talk about the next one, 27 commission membership? Because
okay.
I thought that made a lot of sense to have somebody from the community on there.
So the commission membership, currently there are 5 members of the commission, one of which is a member from the licensee community that we have related to alcohol. I would tell you under 27, as a lawyer, I guess I have some concern related to because the state has a monopoly on alcohol, and because we license agency stores, we control the alcohol in the state. You know, we control the alcohol. We're not an open state. I do have some concerns, and we do need to let legal counsel take a look at this, in my opinion. We haven't necessarily asked our legal counsel either, related to what a commission membership would look like, if, since it's currently federally illegal for marijuana, it may be, if the legislature decides to do that, they do that. But I would certainly ask that you maybe take time to look at legal counsel before you go down that path, because we are the control agency, and I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think state-wise we could probably get in some problems.
Look simple isn't.
Okay.
We'll put that aside. Let's move us ahead to item 36, which is your first technical fix. And then we'll go back and cover some of the others if we have time.
Okay. 1,000 feet of a school. I think it's clear to us that it was intended in the bill. We've heard that from in the places that we've been around the state. People understood that, but there's no definition of school. That's problematic. I think Tommy told me there were 14 different definitions or something of what a school is. You know, plus we've got the criminal provision that comes over the top of this as well, that makes it a felony within 1,000 feet of a school. Mm-hmm. So we've got to come to some accord related to that. I think that's maybe a combination of what the Judiciary Committee does and what you all decide to do. But we would like a definition of what a school is. We think that that is a legislative piece. We've proposed that, but we know that it runs the gamut, you know. So we've proposed what we believe parallels with the medical program currently, so that there's clarity surrounding that. So that's why we proposed the language that we did.
Where's the definition? I thought I saw a definition. It was compulsory attendance.
Oh, sorry. This is 1,000. I'm combining the issues.
Definition.
Sorry.
Okay.
This is the 1,000 feet of a school. So if you don't want them within 1,000 feet of a school, you know, it kind of backed into the criminal law. The way the measure was written, it backed into the criminal law, and then I'm jumping ahead to, we also need to define school. Sorry.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is if we define school, if we took a shot at a definition of school, mm-hmm. then we could leave the matter of the length of, you know, the distance. Or we could try to do both. I mean, it is 1,000 feet is established in the medical program, as I understand it, in the
criminal
measure.
Law as well. So
I'd be willing to put it in there as 1,000 feet, yeah. and to take a shot at the definition, which is number 42 on here.
We just wanted it for unintended consequences, you know.
Right. Well, okay. There's been discussion of vastly broadening out the definition of school, which would have serious implications. So
yeah.
I would be happy to start this conversation in this bill.
Okay. May I?
Yes.
I think that this also begs the question that we'll need to think about from a policy standpoint of whether businesses that are within, that predate a school coming in, will be encompassed by this, because I think there's at least plenty of sentiment that if a prior existing business is there and a school decides to come right next door, it's not necessarily fair to say, well, business, you definitely lose, and actually also you're violating criminal law. Yeah. Bummer for you. So I think as we take this up, let's take up it in the context of whether or not we even want to clarify that larger issue.
That being Section 42. I think that's okay. Where I penciled that in for 42.
So you want to, let me just clarify with my co-chair here, you want to take a shot at that issue in this bill?
Well, I guess I'm saying that I think if a business exists and then a school chooses to come locate right next to it, the business isn't violating the law, and maybe the business doesn't even have to move. So to the extent we need to clarify things to prevent unintended criminal liability, where in whichever paragraph we do it, we should consider that issue to see if there's critical mass of feeling around that.
Okay, I'd be happy to do that.
And Madam Chair, I mean, I think what we're talking about doing is paralleling what was suggested in the bill that I brought forward for on the medical side, that we're going to have equal footing on the retail side. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I think we're going to get to a point when we go through these discussions, we're going to more than likely have parallel tracks of recreational and medical. And so it seems it'd be much more appropriate to have them be parallel and not have different standards for each one.
Same rules, both sides,
Co-chairs and Senator Brzezinski, I do think, though, that while I've heard the 1,000 feet of a school, I do think that the medical side has within 1,000 feet of each other, which was not the intent of the commission to tell you that they want it within 1,000 feet of each other, just to clarify this part of the rule. But I do know that there is a policy debate around whether you have 1,000 feet of each other or not. So that this is certainly an expansive issue that comes into the criminal side as well as our citing side. So we know that it's a much more complicated issue. But just to be clear, the commission hasn't asked for within 1,000 feet of each other.
All right. I think we've given some good direction on that. Okay. Age discrimination.
Number 37 is age discrimination. We have clarification around the alcohol that we can discriminate on age. Since this is a age-restricted product, we just ask for clarification of the statute. So the state and OLCC don't get sued on a age clarification.
The answer is yes. Next, controlled substance definition.
Again, for the purpose of safety and clarity, marijuana is a controlled substance and should be recognized by the Oregon Vehicle Code. We've been told by council that there needs to be some technical fixes related to the Oregon Vehicle Code. I know Senator Brzezinski was going to look at that. We're happy to have you talk with Shannon, Ms. O'Fallon, who's been here before from DOJ related to whatever, but they're just trying to make sure there's not an unintended consequence.
Is this something that should be in this bill, or is this something that
we believe it should be in the technical fix bill, because it's not, I don't think it was intended to be taken out or misinterpreted by the vehicle code. That's what they've pointed out.
Now, Madam Chair, I'd like to talk to the Department of Justice on this, because looking at the definitions for driving under the influence, it already establishes that you can be charged with that offense for being under the influence of a controlled substance, which marijuana is. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure exactly what they want in clarity when the statute already makes it clear. I mean, that's how we're prosecuting people for DUII that are under the influence of marijuana. So what we just need to get some clarity.
Co-chairs and Senator Brzezinski, I'm not sure on the technical piece, but I know that Shannon thought that that she thought this was very technical.
I read this and I was confused.
Okay. I apologize, I can't articulate this one as well.
Well, maybe, Floyd, if you'd be willing to check with Shannon and see if we need, if we even need anything in here. Okay, definition of extracts.
We just want to make sure that that definition of extracts and concentrates is clear, that it's vegetable glycerin or other non-toxic solvents. I think We're not clear on where a concentrate is made with vegetable glycerin or other non-toxic solvents would fall within this. We just want to be clear that we can regulate that. We're not intending to get into the home grow piece, but we want to make it clear.
Okay. What's the feeling?
It's clear in the, I think it's kind of clear in the home grow piece, but we want to make it clear that when we issue a processor license, we also have the ability to control that. So.
What do you think? Put it in? Okay.
I mean, for discussion purposes.
Yeah,
sure.
Discussion. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all for discussion.
I mean, it's going to be a processor license. We're just trying to clarify what it is. We're just trying to make it clear what we're doing.
Okay, definition of leaves.
So this taxes flowers, leaves, and immature plants. The definition of flower and immature plants obviously is clear, but the definition of leaves isn't. We think it should be defined so that it's everything not a flower or immature plant, exclusive of those items which are considered waste material. So it's basically trim includes anything that's not waste of flowers or otherwise. We haven't run into problems related to that, but it provides clarity on the for the licensees, and especially the grower licensees.
Okay, this is something that is really going to be relevant if we have a grower tax. And I guess my question is, I want to have a serious discussion over a point of sale tax. I guess my question is, if we put it in the bill and then we move to a point of sale tax, will this do any harm?
I think we're going to need to define it anyway, because mm-hmm. we're going to track it through the system.
Oh,
so
okay.
We're going to need to define it regardless of where the tax takes place.
Right.
So
okay.
We just want clarity around that so we know what to tax, as, tax regardless if it's on the front end or the back end, how much it's taxed or whatever it's taxed at.
Okay.
So
we'll
whatever you guys do is going to need to be tracked unless you're going to do, you know.
Okay, we'll put it in then. Okay, definition of marijuana.
Marijuana is not classified as it was classified. The classification's been changed. This is a scientific classification change. We didn't do that, so we just want to clarify that.
Help us, Senator Prusansky.
We just need to update the current language that's used.
Okay, we'll put that in. Okay, we did schools, fingerprints, and background checks.
Okay. 42 is the definition of school.
We did that.
Okay, we did that. 43, we don't have the authority to obtain fingerprints, and background checks will not be conclusive to prove identity without them. And we may be limited by getting certain history data without the ability to do that. We'd like to have the ability to obtain fingerprints from applicants so we can truly identify who they are.
Do you do that in liquor?
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, you do a background check.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Selectively we do that.
Oh.
Would you be looking for the same kind of
authority? Yeah, we'd be looking for parallel authority from what we have.
That's reasonable.
All right, that's probably reasonable. Okay. 44.
Immature plant definition. OMMP defines immature plant differently. There should be no distinction from the definition of immature plant from one side to the other. We'd like to use the medical definition as opposed to this definition of what an immature plant is.
Senator Sands, do you think that makes sense?
Well, I think we should put it in the thing. It may be that maybe we should flip and do the other definition, depending on, you know, I'm not that familiar with it right now as to how.
What other definition?
The one that's in 91, they're saying they want to parallel what was in 91 back to OMMP. Mm-hmm. And I know I've seen questions about. Through emails, people are saying that they think that the OMMP definition is not a good one to be working with. So
for both.
Well, it's got to be. I think you got to have parallel, right. No matter what.
The question is, if we put it in, we may change them both to what the 91 says.
Correct. I think that's something that we should allow. Get comment from the public.
Okay.
Co-chairs and Senator Prusansky, I think we just want something that our average enforcement person can go out and know what it is, and everybody's clear on what it is.
Yeah.
What I've told the growers is we want something that has a junior high level definition that I could give to any junior high school person, and they could go out and look at it and say, that is what it is. So
be simpler than that if we're going to understand.
I think that would be a good discussion because okay. We may change it around. Okay.
We would like the same language related to the imposition of the tax limitation. Right now, the question is, what if we can't collect the tax after 36 months? We want this to parallel the exact same thing as alcohol that, you know, we can continue to try and collect.
But that would be the same as alcohol?
Yes.
All right, we'll take a shot.
But with a seed-to-sale tracking system, I don't think it's going to be a huge issue down the line. But if it is, we just want to have it.
Okay. License renewal.
So we'd like to have the flexibility to create an even workflow on our licenses. We're going to have this kind of huge rush, and then we're going to have big, huge periods at OLCC. We'd just like to amend Section 26 so that they're issued for the period of 1 year, so we have even flow of how we're, you know. And for those of you who served in Ways and Means, this is what agencies come to all the time about, rather than a specific
date. This would have an advantage for the licensee because
absolutely.
Someone wouldn't be shortchanged on their license.
On their license renewal. Yeah. So when it's issued, it's good for a year.
Okay. So. Licensee possession limits.
The measure exempts individuals who hold marijuana licenses from certain marijuana offenses, but does not tie this to exemption to operation of the licensed business. So we want to clarify that 79.6 only applies to licensees when they're exercising their privilege under the license. Doesn't just mean they can run around with a bunch of marijuana in their trunk and say, I'm a licensee, when they're not doing what they're doing under the license. It's just a technical, I mean, we view it as a technical issue. If they're transporting their marijuana under the license and they have the manifest and they do that, that's one thing. But if they have a bunch of marijuana that's not under the license, they're not exempted. So we just were clarifying that.
Representative Leininger.
So one of the things that this prompts in my mind is the fact that as a committee, I'm hoping that we're going to consider the issue of if you're growing an allowed number of plants, then I think we need to harmonize the amount you can possess so that the day that you harvest it, even though you were in compliance when you were just growing it, the day you harvest it, suddenly you're not in compliance because you suddenly possess too much. So along the lines of possession limits, I hope that we'll look at all of the current possession limits under 91 and make sure that it's sensible given what people are allowed to grow.
And I would really anticipate that discussion occurring under Representative Buckley's bill and under my bill, which deals with that issue.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Representative Buckley's bill already does. But good point. Okay.
Under Section 48 and 49 under your number 48, number 49 under ours, Section 49 reads a person under 21 years of age may not attempt to purchase marijuana items. A similar provision in Chapter 471, which is the alcohol code, says may or might not attempt to purchase or acquire marijuana items. Mm. So that's what we'd like to see to revise it in order to parallel what we have in alcohol in the current body of law that's
And Cole, the Cole bimbo would smile on that, I think.
Yes, it would. It would.
Okay. ODOT definition?
49, I don't know if we need to discuss. They improperly define ODOT in the bill.
No, I'm sorry. This is too controversial.
Okay. ODOT may be offended by it, but, you know.
All right. 50, R50, tax collection.
We want to be able to enforce liens and create the authority to have liens for delinquent taxes. We can do that under alcohol. We should be able to do that here. So I don't
now, what would happen if we put this in and then our eventual tax gets enforced by the Department of Revenue?
What you would probably do is conform that to make revenue that have the ability to levy those liens. So it would be easy to do because it sounds like it's going to be a subsequent bill. But if you're doing technical fixes in this bill, they can, you know, you can pass that through and then you could harmonize it and put it into a court in your second bill. So that's
all right. Well,
that happens in the building often. So
yes, we'll have a discussion on the concept.
All yeah. Right.
Okay. Tax deductions.
51 is tax deductions. The way the bill's written, we think it's expansive. This is really more of a revenue-related issue, but certainly it. We brought it to your attention because it was brought to the attention of council that technically now under this they could deduct for sale of things like meth and cocaine if they choose those as their sidelines. And so from a revenue collection standpoint, you probably don't want to allow them to deduct those things. But
well, we don't like to discriminate against meth and cocaine, but that probably makes sense.
Okay. 52 is tax record retention. We think that it should, it's shorter than the time period for revenue to do a tax audit on them. We think it should be retained for the same period that revenue does a tax audit, so revenue can, we can harmonize and revenue can harmonize as to their retention of the tax records. So, and I don't know what all those, I don't know what all those definite, you, Madam Co-Chair probably knows more about what those records retention provisions are.
Senator Farrelly.
Wouldn't the appropriate approach be for all business records retention rather than merely or specifically tax records?
Correct.
So this should be just records retention.
Well, those records that they need to prove their taxes. Yeah.
Well, no,
they may choose to they may choose that if their plant grows how much every day and they're tracking that.
That's not what I'm interested in.
Yes.
What I'm interested in is making a clear statement that records retention we have records retention requirements for business already.
Mm-hmm.
So you're referencing specifically tax records. Shouldn't this section just be records retention requirements?
Co-chairs and Senator Farrelly, certainly that's the way to define them. But I think that there are other business records that aren't required for taxes. So I would say we don't require a lot of other business records to be sales data. I mean, you know, their sales, who they sell to, all those kinds of things would be business records, but they wouldn't be tax records necessarily.
Right, but if we are going to insist on a seed to sale tracking system, I would think that you'd insist on having a reasonable period for records retention on all the production, all the waste, all the side streams, all the other potential feedstock.
Okay.
Thank you.
This doesn't say how long you want it to be.
Co-chair, we want to make it in accordance with what is required by the state for the audit on the tax records is what we had, is where OLCC came down on, which is ten years?
I think it's 7 years.
Yeah, I think it's 7 years is what I believe it is. But we were just trying to make it was shorter than the time period. I don't know
is. What we want, and I think this would meet your needs.
We want it to
comport with what the Department of Revenue requires. Yeah. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator, Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Almost got an upgrade there for a moment.
Or a downgrade, depending on how you look at it.
One thing that I hope we'll get to one of these days is related to the startup costs. And it's no surprise that startup costs are probably going to be larger than anticipated here. But in looking at Section 43 of the measure, disposition of monies, and talking about a revolving fund and $250,000 in it and all of that, I'm just wondering if the fees that are anticipated to come from the implementation here will in any way scratch the surface of the startup costs, and if not, how long we expect it to take before the fees collected actually backfill the startup costs of the whole thing. So, subject for another day, but I'd appreciate us getting to that one of these days.
Absolutely. Thank you. This takes us to the end of the commission requests and the technical fixes. So what I'd like to do now in our limited time is have you look over the other category and flag for us any that you feel are particularly important to include.
I would direct you to item number 30. We may need the authority to require electronic transfer. I think that ultimately that would be the right way to go. That's something we've heard around the state, but it's an issue related to whether the banking system is going to accept deposits or not. We'd like the ability to utilize electronic funds transfers, as well as require them if there's the banking system that's available to do that. We think it'd be a lot more efficient way to collect the taxes to have the electronic funds be able to be transferred directly to the state rather than have people send things to OLCC.
Chair Leininger, I think that's what they do in Colorado for at least part of their withholding. They have some kind of a system in Colorado. I guess the question I had is, given the questions over banking, whether we would be in some kind of legal jeopardy by putting this in.
Yeah. Well, I think what we're asking for is the discretion to be able to do that and require that at some point in time, mm-hmm. if the banking system's robust enough. We certainly don't want to put anybody in a position not to do that. But for the efficiency of the department and the ability to collect tax and keep our costs lower to the state, it certainly would make a lot of sense to require it ultimately if the banking system could catch up.
Okay.
So we would like the discretion to be able to do that, but obviously, you know, we're not going to require that if the banking system is not where it needs to be. But we don't know when that may break loose or if it will ever break loose. But certainly giving us discretion allows us to be able to do it if people don't have an issue with it.
Okay. Is everybody okay with that? Okay, we'll put that in. What else on here? Obviously, things like the residency requirement or for a policy bill.
Mm-hmm. The racketeering law, I think, is an important thing. As a regulatory agency, there's racketeering when there's huge issues related to criminal. It's not something the OLCC could certainly enforce. It would be a Department of Justice or local issue. It's there for tobacco. We've utilized it in the tobacco side of things. When there's big tax fraud related issues, I think that it's not an issue for OLCC other than trying to collect the tax for the state. We can refer it over, but then you just get into kind of a delivery kind of situation rather than a racketeering case where you can you have a lot more tools in the Attorney General's toolbox generally who would handle a racketeering kind of case. So, you know, I think that that's something that's important, whether you want to kick that over to judiciary or not.
I would think it would be a judiciary issue.
We certainly,
an AG issue.
I think that's an issue.
OLCC issue.
Right.
But it's tangentially an OLCC issue because we're going to be the ones that discover it. Right. But then there's going to need to be a criminal tool to handle the fraud that's occurring in the system.
If you discover something, you'd have to do a handoff.
Right. That's what I.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Co-chairs and Senator Cruz, our plans to do a handoff on the criminal stuff,
right.
Regardless. But it is a regulatory tool that would end up in the criminal side, but it certainly protects the integrity of the system overall to be able to do that. 33, the name of the commission, certainly is a. We haven't had a preference. And frankly, there's a bill to have us regulate tobacco. So we don't know what we're going to end up with by the end of this session.
I will have to give a shout out to our committee administrator today, who I think came up with the perfect name because you wouldn't have to change your acronym.
Uh-huh.
And that is the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission.
Yes.
Right. And we got to have some cuter than that.
At Sarah Burke, we have certainly heard that a lot, but we thought it was arrogant for us to propose a name change for our own commission.
Well, our committee administrator did that for you.
Thank you for being our advocate.
Okay.
I would tell you 31 is an issue that we've heard around, whether you want to allow home delivery or not. Mm. It is an issue that requires some clarification. It's a policy issue. It's certainly a question that we've had, and it's unclear what a bona fide order means, one way or the other, whether you want to get into those woods or not related to home delivery.
As it's written now, is home delivery allowed?
Well, we think it's unclear, and there may be a push from people to ask the OLCC to do home delivery. We've been told by council it's not really clear. That's going to be the question. That's a policy. We believe that's a policy choice for you, not for us.
Senator Farrelly.
Well, in the Canadian model, they made a specific federal provision for mail delivery. Uh-huh. In the case of Oregon, that would not be an option. So I assume you're referring then to either messenger services or something commercial like FedEx and
co-chairs and Senator Farrelly. I think the idea is more like the pizza delivery, where they would take recreational marijuana to a location and drop it off. If we did that, we would, probably have smartphone technology, would check people's ID, and we obviously wouldn't be serving to allow them to serve to people who are intoxicated, which we don't do in alcohol or do under marijuana. But that is certainly a legislative question, and they would certainly have to have a manifest coming out of the seed to sale tracking system for they'd have several ounces, they'd be delivering it. So I'm going to leave that to your able group of individuals to make that decision.
I can sit down. Pizza and pot, being delivered together.
So I will tell you that we have had several questions related to that.
So I guess what I'd like to find out from the committee is, do we want to put something in this bill prohibiting it?
I think we should talk about it.
We'll leave that to another fascinating
discussion. I figured you probably would.
Okay, are there any parting thoughts from committee members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Przanski.
I just want to point out to individuals at the dais, I had an opportunity to come across some brochures that are used in Washington State at their retail operations that basically gives, one is from the Washington State Liquor Control Board. The other is from a vendor, but it's something that we may want to look at of having OLCC put together to give some general information to consumers so they kind of know the law. And I just thought it was somewhat worth letting people see what how Washington State is trying to get information out to the general public.
Thank you. Co-chairs and Senator Przanski, we appreciate you giving those. Senator Przanski gave us several copies of those. We do have the $350,000 that was granted by the legislature to do some public education, and we are going to be out trying to clarify what the law is for people so they don't get in trouble and clarify what's going on ahead of this July 1st. We felt like we had an obligation to bring that and you might have supported us.
Senator Przanski. Senator Farrelly.
They look a lot alike.
I need to get more sleep.
Can you, in one sentence or two, describe the twin missions of OLCC relative to alcohol, and then tell me how those missions align with marijuana?
Co-chairs and Senator Farrelly, we have an obligation to put a regulated product into legally regulated product into a market, so we have an obligation to inform and make available, as well as provide a strong public safety overlay over the system.
Madam Chair, what I was really looking for is the first mission is to promote temperance, and the second mission is to maximize profits. Now, those are the twin missions with alcohol. What are the twin missions with regard to marijuana?
Co-chairs and Senator Farrelly, I would assume that they're, if that's your perspective, you would assume that they're the same, but I don't think that the OLCC is clear on those.
Take it back to the commission.
Yes.
We'll point out the statutes to you later.
Happy to do so.
Okay. Representative Langley.
I'd I'd love to. I would love to know, you know, so I'll be chairing the next meeting, and we are figuring out exactly what to have next on the docket. It could be that we'll be talking about these OLCC recommendations and seeking public comment on them, and whether that's next Monday or next Wednesday or the specific day it happens, I just want to encourage everyone that this is going to be your opportunity to give us feedback on these suggestions, some of which are very profound policy, have very significant policy implications, some of which are technical, some of which we think may be technical, but maybe you see it differently and you see policy implications. We really are going to rely on you to give us your input, and people maybe watching online, to give us your input about what you think about these as we try to go forward with a technical bill and ultimately develop our bill on the substantive merits.
Thank you for that, Representative Leininger. And just to review our work here, Senator Prezansky and Representative Helm have volunteered to work on item 23, the review of books and records for cause.
They didn't volunteer, they were volunteered. Okay.
Oh, I was hoping you'd skip that over, Senator Cruz. And my gratitude to both of you. We are going to try to get a draft done. I'm going to meet with my co-chair and legislative counsel tomorrow to get a draft underway, get this going as quickly as we can. So the quicker you can give us a recommendation on that, the better. So thank you very much for that. And thank you very much for this presentation.
Yeah. A lot Co-chairs of and Senator Burke, we'd like to thank you all for your time. The OLCC has worked hard on this, and we've tried to ferret out all those things. I will tell you, though, that we may be back to you with more technical fixes. We don't anticipate a bunch, but certainly peel the onion on this thing, is certainly we all discover new layers, and I know you all are discovering new layers. So
this is a
two-way process, and we want to keep those things in rule, which properly land in rule, which provide flexibility for the market and flexibility for the product to make this a viable industry that Oregonians voted on. So we leave you with that, and if there's anything else we can do to continue to do this.
Thank you, and thank you to the committee. This was an especially good discussion tonight. So with that, we will, I'm not sure, I don't think we're going to meet Monday, but do check your agendas. But for the time being, we are adjourned. For the time being, we are adjourned.